Hey guys, my name is Sean Hayes. I know we haven't repeated our names in a while, but my name is Sean Hayes.
Jason Bateman. Just to be clear, I got to get dressed. We're about to start, right?
Yeah. But in case people don't know what the show's like if one of us brings on a guest, the other two don't know about it. It's a surprise.
And I'm Will Arnett. Is it my turn yet? Sorry, I'm Will Arnett, and welcome to Smartless.
Smart.
Do you want to see a great photo I got? Do you like photos?
Oh, yeah. That was today's golf outfit. I went with the light pants today because it's warm out here in Los Angeles.
Look at Jason. Jason's wife, Amanda, sent this to me.
Yeah.
Dancing in the morning.
Is that you, Jay?
Well, I was happy about my outfit. Just looked great. You know, I was
those
happy
pants,
that I was...
Those particular pants, you've worn them before. And I got to say, they're not my favorite.
Oh.
They're not.
Is there a compliment on the end of it?
Because they're white?
You look great, first of all, you don't look bad in them. I said they're not my favorite.
I know.
That front piece. It kind of looks like a...
That's a penis.
No.
That's what we call it.
The front penis?
You know. The front piece. You mean the...
It's kind of like a fold over. It almost looks like a formal slack.
Right. Yeah, it is. I think it is a bit of a trouser that they make there.
Yeah.
Sorry, listener, just going over latest golf.
Hang on,
wear,
I'm trying to put this into
fashion.
Sean, just so that Sean can feel included.
I came on a little late today.
You came on late. What's going on? You're still in the city.
Still in the city. Had to change. Don't you have to change clothes like 2-3 times a day because the humidity is just... You can walk outside. I'm just drenched in sweat.
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing outside? Why don't you stay inside?
Walking.
You have a beautiful apartment.
He's walking around, man.
Yeah, no, I try to because it's air conditioning here.
Is it real humid back east right now?
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievably humid right now.
Yeah.
It's humid out here, so it must be terrible out there.
Oh, because it travels.
So then, Sean,
what do you... So you and Scotty, you pop out of the apartment and you just start walking around. Do you have some favorite places you like to go to?
Well, we do. There's one restaurant.
Bring misters? Do you guys bring misters?
No, we bring misses.
Mystically.
There's one French restaurant we like on the east side. Oh, this is what I did for the first time in my entire life. I walked through Central Park.
What? First time ever?
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
First time ever?
Oh, I get real.
I mean,
that.
I walked to that restaurant that I can't remember.
Tavern on the Green?
That's it. Yeah, Tavern on the Green. I walked there once, but I never walked from like Upper West Side all the way through it, all the way down. It's kind of scary because they have, in the center, they have all those paths that go in like 10,000 different directions.
Oh, granddad.
But then, yeah. And there's like...
Did you see the skating rink over there too?
I did, yeah. The roller skating rink. It was a roller skating rink.
No, in the summertime.
Ma,
yeah.
Ma, you can't believe how big it is.
Mama.
Well, they had people walking everywhere, and people just seemingly going. They were busy.
It was wild.
Just walls and walls of buildings.
We used to, when I was first living in New York 45 years ago, and I was very broke, we used to just walk through the park because we had nothing else to do, and it was free. And we just have a head full of rope, and we just walk around with shades on.
That's,
you know,
weed,
giggling.
Listener. Weed.
Yeah.
Head full of... I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Head full of rope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we just walk around and sit on the grass and, I don't know, maybe smoke some butts and just walk over
really?
A different part. Yeah, because it was free. We had nothing to do, and we were, you know, we were broke. But it was great. I love Central
But, you
Park.
Know, my... Do you guys go to a chiropractor? Because all you do is walk, right, in New York? My back is fucking killing me.
What kind of shoes you got right now? Here, by the way, this is an opportunity for you to get some new shoes.
Are you
ready?
Speak smartly here.
Speak right now. What do you want? What do you like?
I forget what they're called. We all have them. They're called...
The On shoes, those
you
Swiss
might
ones?
Need like leg braces or something if you're blowing your back out just walking.
What? How would you feel about a wagon and then Scotty pulls it? Would you sit in a wagon?
Look, I'm not above it.
You've seen the dogs with the blown out backs?
Yeah.
Right? With the little carts?
I would walk around.
What about a Segway?
Yeah, what about a Segway?
What about a... Once you get electric bikes and park them in your
apartment.
Yeah,
I think we have to do bikes. I think it'd be kind of fun.
But get bike. But you're coming out here tomorrow.
Yes.
And hopefully
and
we'll
by the
go
way,
for
we'll,
a bike
like,
ride.
Honestly, yeah. You don't, like, we'll come in. You don't have to do anything. We'll just
No.
You're going for lunch at our friend.
You're going for lunch at our friend's house, and then you're going to look around, and then we have a dinner tomorrow night.
Perfect.
And
then we leave first thing in the morning.
Chappie's here. Chappie's on his way here. He's in. Bob is here. And my sister is here right now with my brother-in-law, Ed.
It's a house full.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except
it's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, Jason, have fun, eh?
Yeah. So, you got everybody there except me, I guess. Yeah.
Why didn't you come out, Jay, and then just go down?
I know, you should come out.
Because we've got other plans, okay?
All right, well.
We're doing other things.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys are going on a different vacay, which I don't know.
Finish the sentence?
Wait. I don't know why you don't come out to where we are. All your friends are out here is what I'm saying.
It's not up to me. I'm not living in a dictatorship. This is a democratic house, and there's a lot of complications to our trips.
That's your problem.
As you know.
That's the thing is you think it's a democracy. You do live in a dictatorship. The problem is you're not the dictator.
Yeah. That's so funny. Amanda.
It's true.
Speaking of dictator, terrible segue because it does not apply to this person at all. But I will say this is somebody I'm really excited. I'm excited because, Sean, I can't wait to see how excited you are because this is going to hit you right in a sweet spot.
Must be an athlete.
right in a sweet spot for you. And also for me, he's been in a lot of films that I just absolutely love. I remember his first film. I'm not going to say the title yet. I think it was his first film, maybe a second film, but the first film that really had a lot of sort of wide acclaim with went on to be a very famous director as well. And I remember thinking, like, this guy, he just has, I don't know, I can't not watch him when he's on screen. He's got that thing. You know, there are certain performers who have that. He's got that thing where you're just like, you're glued to and you're with him on everything he says, no matter the role. Uh-oh. This is this guy. He's won Emmys and he's won Golden Globes and he's been a globe trotter in that he's gone around the globe on his motorcycle. He's an incredible actor. He is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Ewan McGregor.
What?
I got it right on the motorcycle.
My God. How's it going?
Wait, why is Ewan McGregor in Sean's wheelhouse?
What are you talking
about? Sean is the most massive Star Wars fan of all time.
Are you joking me?
Oh, right. I was thinking song and dance.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Wait, Ewan. Oh, my God. This is so cool to meet you.
How are you doing? So nerve-wracking. I don't know why I'm so nervous.
Why?
Don't be nervous.
Sean does that to everybody. It's weird.
You have nothing to be nervous about. We are crazy. Absolute fools, and there's nothing to this show. It's idiocy.
It's titled appropriately.
Got it. You're immediately the smartest guy in the room.
Scotty, come over
here. Oh, yeah. Here comes Scotty.
No, don't
he's
worry
his
about husband. It.
Scotty's going to lose it.
Do you know who's the guest is?
Just let him look and don't tell him.
Look at that is.
Oh, my God.
That's my husband.
Ewan McGregor, welcome, man. Welcome. Cool. What an honor to have you here on the show.
Well, it's such a great pleasure for me to be on.
I was just an enormous fan of yours, buddy.
Do you know Trainspotting is one of my favorite movies of all time?
Oh, what has he done that has been bad?
Nothing.
Well, you answer that.
Wait, hang on. But I was going to start with this. That film I'm talking about, Ewan, is Shallow Grave, of course.
Of course.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Can you talk to us a little bit about how that came together and what that experience was like and where it met you in your life at that time, that film?
Yeah, it was the first film I ever made. You were right. Is this good?
Yes. Great.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Okay. You were right. It's the first film I ever made. I'd left drama school and I did a six-month shoot on a Dennis Potter series called Lipstick on Your Collar. So I sort of got out of drama school and straight in front of a camera for 6 months, which was amazing, like training, if you like, in that respect. And then I did a play, and then I did a period drama called The Red and the Black. And then I went for an audition for this film called Shallow Grave. So I'd done a couple of things on television, and
did you know Danny Boyle before that?
No. I didn't know any of them. And they were really very much like a three-person team. Danny, the director, of course, and then Andrew McDonald was the producer and John Hodge, the writer. And the three of them were very much like a creative team, like really, truly they were.
Mm-hmm. And was Trainspotting the same team?
Yeah, it was them, And so that's when I met them the first time. And I was just lucky to get, I was so hungry and so fucking like, let me at it. You know, I felt like I'd been ready for a long time, you know?
And
then I got on you know, we shot it so quick. We built that apartment in Shallow Grave in a factory in Glasgow, you know? And it was all, it was so, Brian Tofano shot it, who went on to shoot Trainspotting and Life Less Ordinary. And he's a brilliant cinematographer.
I auditioned for a Life Less Ordinary.
Did you really?
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And for Danny Boyle, I was so nervous. I just moved to Los Angeles. And I, in the scene, he's supposed to throw keys at me. So I brought keys to act like they were just thrown at me. And he threw me his set of keys. So then I had two set of keys.
Did you know that he was going to do it, though? He might have hurt
no,
you.
No, I didn't.
Wow, that's
I didn't
risky.
Know he was going to do it.
So, and how was the shoot, Sean? How was the shoot?
I didn't get it.
I'll bet you were great in the audition, but I would imagine that those guys that you also got the job also because it seems like you kind of fit in with their kind of fabric. They just seem like good dudes like you. And did that kind of bring about Trainspotting as well? I mean, aside from your talent.
Yeah. It was interesting because it was all of our first movies. You know, Danny had been a director in the theater for years, and I think that's why he's so very good, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And this was his first movie and Andrew's first movie. And John was a doctor who wrote this brilliant script about these people. I guess he trained in Edinburgh, so he knew about like Edinburgh life and living in that city. And it was just the most amazing experience. But I felt like it was like the other things I'd done. You know, I did that period drama and I'd done that. Lipstick in Your Collar was set in the 50s and it was all single camera work anyway. So it felt much the same until I saw it. And I saw what they'd been doing, you know, visually and what Brian, the shots that Danny and Brian dreamt up. And it sort of felt like, it really felt like we'd sort of made a mark on British cinema. That's how it felt when it came out.
Yes, you did.
And then we took it to, we went to, it was my first adult trip to America. We came to Sundance with it. And I'd been in the States when I was 9 with my parents, which was ridiculous. Nobody comes to America for holidays. Like, it's too big of a deal, you know. But when I was 9, we came over. So this was my first time back as a sort of grown-up. And I went to Sundance with Shallow Grave, and they gave me the script there for Trainspotting.
Oh, my God.
And they always, cool. he said, it was very, like, we're not offering you this, and it's not an offer, and just, you know, we just want to know what you think of it. And so I read that on the plane. I was like, fucking hell. I mean, it's the role of a lifetime, isn't it? It's like one of the great leading roles. And but John, I think I'm right in saying, John didn't think I was right for it because in the novel, in Irvine Welsh's novel, Ewan Bremner, who played Spud, had played Rents on in the stage version before we made the movie.
Oh, it was a play? Trainspotting was a play?
It was a novel first, and then they made a play of it, and Ewan Bremner was in the play as Renton.
Wow.
And in fact, he's much better casting in terms of the Renton that's written in the novel, you know? He's much more Ewan Bremner-esque than me-esque. So I think John wasn't quite convinced, and I had to do it, you know? So I went away, and I just lost loads of weight. I didn't eat, and...
Yeah.
When you say you went away, where'd you go? You like a hole in the ground? Where did you go?
Yeah, where do you got to go to lose weight?
Well, I just did it. They still hadn't offered it to me, you know? They still hadn't said that it was my role. But I just thought, fuck it, I'm gonna make them know that it's my role. So I went away and I saw them now and again. But we'd made that movie together and Andrew had an office in Soho in London that I would drop into now and again. So I just didn't see them for a wee while. Just like shed loads of weight because I was young and it was easier to do then, you know.
Yeah.
So hard.
And I was a nasty drinker back in the day. And I remember I just started drinking like white wine and clear stuff, you know, instead of the alcoholic sort of dieting, you know.
Right.
Just drink the clear ones, you know.
Yeah.
And it seemed to work actually to a degree. Anyway, I lost all the weight and then I went back in to see them and I think they were like, okay, because I looked more. Right then, I was more sort of emaciated and stuff. But it was the most amazing experience making that film, too.
By the way, that film just took the world by, I was going to say surprise, but it just took it by storm, really. I feel like that movie kind of shifted the way, for a while there, the way people made movies. Because it was very edgy, and obviously it was very raw and had a lot, but it wasn't just for the sake of it. There was kind of a point to all of it, and there was something deeper happening. It was very cool. Sean, by the way, I can see the wheel is turning. You're just hoping, like, God, Trainspotting the musical. If there's any way that Ewan could find a way to get you involved
5, 6,
with
7, 8, heroin here, and then it's more heroin there.
Sean, now,
and
by the way, if Danny, that's really heroin, the song. If Danny decides to do it, you go in, and this time maybe you wouldn't bring your own keys.
Wait, Ewan, speaking of that, when you guys did the drugs in the movie, it was like both, you know, incredible to watch just as actors, but just like it looks so real. Like I can't imagine. Like, did Danny ever talk you through like
it was hardcore.
What the experience was for a hardcore? I want to ask you if you actually did it to get into character, but like,
yeah.
How did you get there? Because it did look
by
so
saying
real.
I don't want to ask you, by the way. I know it's a soft ask. But
totally just an ask, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an ask. Yeah,
it really is.
I'm not going to ask you. I'm just going to put you in a difficult position, but go ahead, Ewan.
No, it's quite an interesting point because I didn't do heroin. I've never done heroin, but I did think about it. And I thought, I don't want to do heroin's addicts a disservice by getting it wrong.
So I did cross
my mind. And I did say to Danny...
I mean, you don't want to disrespect the heroin.
Right.
You
don't officer, no. I was just researching.
I was just trying not to disrespect the addicts.
What do you mean? Why do you mean? Why do I have a lighter under this spoon? Do you not know what I'm...
I start shooting in 3 weeks.
So I brought it up and I said, look, do you think we should do it? And I really thought about it because I thought, well, John, our writer, he's a doctor. Like, he could do it to us properly, you know, so that we don't die and stuff. He could probably administer the...
God. Oh, my God.
Yeah, right? So that we were safe-ish. And, but it just became apparent that that was just really a disrespectful idea to the people we were working with. Yeah. And we went up to Glasgow and we worked with this group of recovering addicts called the Carlton Athletic Club, and they're a group of, it was predominantly guys then, and they have soccer teams, and they're all ex-junkies, but they have these football competitions, and they're five-a-side competitions, and they kicked our ass. Like, the five actors, you know, of the young, we got our asses handed to us by all these ex-junkies. Uh-huh. But once we started working with those guys, and we had this guy, Eamon, who was our advisor on set, and he took us to some meetings and I started listening to all these guys. And, you know, I saw guys who'd been sober a long time, clean a long time. And then some guys who just, you know, who were still in withdrawal. And I felt like once I met those guys and saw what was going on in their eyes, you know, I thought it would be just massively disrespectful to not have all your faculties together. So from then on,
What was the feedback from the junkie community? Was it positive response to the film?
Yeah,
I'm actually kind of serious.
No, there was. There was a backlash on the film because people said it, you know, thought it glorified drug taking, and I don't think so, and I've never thought so, but. Some people did think that. And I met a couple. I remember I was passing a homeless guy in Soho one night and he'd seen the movie and he's like, you're one of us, brother. You know, come on, he was totally on the wrong side of the fence, you know. He was like, yeah, fucking come on. Oh, dear. Yeah.
Wow.
I guess it's better than getting stopped by the gang that loves Star Wars, right?
What are you saying? We'll be right back.
We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8+ acres. I gotta keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8+ acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. As I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work. Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet, it's chewy, it's cool, it's creamy, all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it, first of all. An absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
And now, back to the show.
I just finished Obi-Wan, and it's so fucking good. You're so great in it. I love that.
That's good.
How did they get James Earl Jones to come back to do the voice of Vader? I mean, that's crazy.
I know. Amazing. I'm just glad they did. It's so amazing. We had such a good time doing it. It was a long time since we shot episode 3. It was 2003. And but it felt good, you know? It felt quite good to come. I was in a much better place with it. And because our prequels came out and they sort of universally weren't liked by, and it was all pre social media and everything. So the sort of voice that we heard were the critics' voices, and they didn't like them much. And so it was pretty disappointing at the time.
But the fans liked them though. Like that was the thing. Yeah. I feel like the fans liked them
for the story.
And you're right. Boy, that's an interesting sort of distinction that you've made, that we do live in a time now where the critics' voices have just been completely drowned out, haven't they?
Yeah, they're just aggregated now. It's just Rotten Tomatoes, period.
Yeah.
Right, but even that doesn't really matter as much as what social media is saying. And that's not necessarily critics, it's people, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's other people.
Mm-hmm. I think so,
Do you, that's interesting. So, anyway, it was hard to get back into it, or it was easy, or?
Well, I think when I finished the third one, I wouldn't have, if you'd asked me then, I'd be like, okay, I was always happy to be in it, and I was always grateful to be involved in something that big and to be part of the legend of it because I loved it. When I was a kid, I loved those films.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
who didn't?
I was seven, I think, six or seven when the first one came out.
Same.
And just like, you can't, you know, it's in you somehow. And I know it is because when I was working on this series and I was faced with Vader for the first time in all his, like, scary majesty, I was totally knocked the wind out of me. It was quite scary seeing him coming at you. Yeah. And stormtroopers, like, I never acted with stormtroopers on the prequels, so we did scenes with stormtroopers, and I was like a boy again, you know, just like deep inside me.
And talk about a huge difference in, I mean, I know there was a gang of work between, you know, Shallow Grave and Trainspotting and then the Star Wars work. There's tons of stuff you did in between there, but I mean, the difference between probably what, like a 28-day shoot on those earlier films and then Star Wars, it'd take you probably a half a year to shoot those movies and working with green screens and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I would imagine your answer to which do you like better, you'd probably say, you know, little bits of each, but it's a totally different process, isn't it?
It's a different process, and it teaches you that you're always challenged, aren't we? By every job we do, there's some challenge that it throws at you. And in those prequels, it was very much the challenge of like being trying to be believable with this dialogue in front of a blue curtain, you know, for 4 months.
Hey, is it true that George Lucas didn't give you guys the script until like 2 days before every scene or something like that? Is that true?
No.
Okay, thanks.
Not true.
Was one of those, you know, I had to go to the studio and sit in a room sort of locked in to read it.
Oh, yeah. I see.
But we had the script.
You know what made me laugh recently? This made me laugh so hard. I read somewhere, I saw you in an interview or something, saying you used the Force, the Jedi Force, to open automated doors at like supermarkets and stuff.
But only if people are watching. If I think somebody's watching, I give it a little.
You do a little like wave in front of the door. That is so funny.
And don't get anything away here. Just like just
now, you can go around to stores and supermarkets and thing and movie theaters and stuff like that. Or do you get tackled by fans and stuff? Or do you just kind of get stopped and say, oh, hey, I really like your stuff, and would you take a picture? Yeah. And you kind of carry on.
Yeah, are they nuts because of all the Star Wars stuff?
Well, because of everything, really.
Oh, I have everything, but I mean...
Well, I think it's had really interesting...
You've got this great level of fame, I think, like this perfect level of fame where your celebrity can get films financed and be a recruiting element for other cast elements and directors and stuff like that. Yet you can still go out and have maybe could find some anonymity if you just kind of dress right. You know, you can kind of.
Yeah, I just tried to just do my life and not.
Yeah.
To a point. And then there's a point, it's always, unavoidable when you're somewhere, you know, when you go to do press somewhere and they know the hotel you're staying in, and that's unavoidable. And that, I guess that I have to learn to be better with that. I'm not great with the autograph hunters who stand outside your hotel because I don't really believe they're
just looking to make money.
They don't really want the autograph. They want to sell the autographs. And, I find that gets my ire up a bit. But
Sean, can I just jump in and say my son Abel, who's 11 years old, and I've never done this, but I'm going to put you on the spot, Ewan. He asked me to ask you. He was wondering, why did you accept the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi? Like, was there a reasoning besides the money?
That's from Abel.
He texted
That's you. Brilliant.
That's hysterical.
He asked because he knew that you were on the show today, and he is such a massive fan, Abel. He is freaking out that you're here today. And he left yesterday to go up and spend a couple days with his mom, and he is like, freaking out. He knew you were coming on today, and then he just texted me that, knowing that you're
on
now.
Cute. Well, I imagine you didn't probably even need to read the script, right? I mean, the yes was probably automatic, given...
I really had to think about it, because it came quite shortly after that Trainspotting period, and I really, by that time, I was so full of myself. You know, like I was like this. I'm Danny Boyle's actor. I'm like fucking urban grunge. I am.
Here I go.
I am the oasis of the British movie industry. Right. You know, and then when the Star Wars came along, I thought, I don't know if I want to do this. This isn't me. You know,
right.
And also I worried about sort of I suppose I was worried about typecasting or sure. something like that. Or
because you're going to be so famous from it.
It was so. It's just going to be so big, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I thought, well, I don't know. It didn't really. I was so into being the sort of anti-hero, if you like. You know, I live in America now, but for a long time I didn't. And I thought, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm like a indie British actor is what I felt yeah. like. And I felt, and more than anything, I felt like I was Danny Boyle's actor. And I felt that that sort of defined me.
Yeah.
I really did. And so I did. I asked everybody. I spoke to my uncle was in all three of the original ones. He played Wedge Antilles. My uncle's an actor called Dennis Lawson. I asked him and I said, what do you think? And he said, if you want a career after 30, don't do it. That's what he said.
Oh, really?
What did Danny Boyle say? Did you ask Danny Boyle?
I did ask Danny Boyle, yeah. I think he said that I should do it. But in the end, it just got closer and closer. Like, the closer I got to it, I remember doing, going to recalls and screen tests and then meeting George. And it got down to, like, two or three of us, I think. And by that time, I just thought, I just was so attached to the idea of it from when I was a kid that I thought, to get a chance to be that character and to be the younger yeah. Alec Guinness is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
but you were also signing up for what two or three at a minimum. Yeah,
three.
And but the other thing is, like, you asked your uncle, but the last thing you should do is ask another actor any advice on whether or not you should do something. I think it's like the worst thing to do because they can't help but put their own fucked up, reasoning into it or their own desire or whatever. They can't help it.
Right.
I remember
they didn't
one time
ask me to do it.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't ask me. Right. And I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it, even if you did. I remember years ago, you were at the Golden Globes. And I remember because Bradley Cooper at the time was, I think he was on Alias maybe. And so he was there. He had gone and he was like, I'm going to the Golden Globes tonight. And we lived in this same. And so then he came back and he was like, man, he and I were just talking about this the other day because I told him you were on the show. And he goes, man, I just saw Ewan McGregor was there tonight and he had like eyeliner on and he was there and he goes, and he looked so fucking cool. And he's like, and we could never pull that off. We could never do that. And he was right. We were like,
you had eyeliner on at the Globes?
And he was so cool. Ewan was. And we were like, fuck man, we could never do this.
I did that film Velvet Goldmine with Todd Haynes and I just loved it. And I really always had this rock and roll fantasy, that I probably still have a little bit, that wouldn't it be amazing to be like a rock and roller on tour and stuff. And mm-hmm. I don't think that, for a while I did a wore makeup and nail varnish and stuff, but only for a little while. And I liked it. And I've always liked this isn't probably what you should do, so I'm going to do it, at the Globes. Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's not the best, but anyway.
By the way, you pulled it off. It was very cool, and I get it, too, because I'm also a contrarian, I think, by heart, by nature, and I'm always like, if everybody else is doing it, then that means I absolutely cannot do that thing.
Yeah.
Often to my own, disservice or whatever. It's not always the best thing, but I don't know if I'm sensing that there's a little bit of that in you as well.
I know there's definitely, I'm like that with movies that are hugely successful. I'm like, well, I'm not going to watch it, and then I'll see it 8 years later and I'm like, that film's really good. I was like, yeah,
right.
Yeah, that film was really good 8 years ago.
I know. I do the same thing. I do that with movies. I do that with TV shows. I was like, hey, man, during the pandemic, I was like, have you guys seen The American Office? It's really good. and I'm friends with a lot of people on the show. I'm friends.
Yeah. Right.
Like Krasinski, and I had to be like, I'd actually never watched it. And I'm like, it's really, really good.
I did that with Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad, I watched like 2 years ago.
I feel like I'm going to be saying that about The Sopranos when I get that watch.
Yeah, I've never seen The Sopranos.
I did that. The Sopranos was my one years later. Did you not watch it?
Not yet.
It's really good.
I mean, like one here or one there. Yeah.
Ewan, this is a true story. One day when we were, Jason and I were working together years ago, he came after a weekend and he goes, hey, this is a true story. He goes, hey, Blues Brothers is pretty good. And I go, this is like 2004. And I go, Blues Brothers, the 1978 film? Yeah, it's pretty good.
I just figured everyone had sort of missed it, like me. Everyone's like me, right?
There's so many.
That's the narcissist, Captain Narcissism in me.
That's just terrible.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Ewan, where did the motorcycle passion come from?
I've always ridden motorbikes since I was, well, no, I wanted to ride motorbikes since I was a teenager, and my parents would never let me. And so it was just after I finished drama school, I realized that I could do what I wanted, you know. And so I got my first little motorbike in London. And I used to park outside, and when they came to visit me, there was a lovely girl upstairs called Elska. I used to take all my stuff up to my riding gear, my helmets and gloves, and I'd stash them in her place. So they wouldn't see them, you know, uh-huh. and pretend that... that went on for a while. And I started riding. I just love it. I still love it as much as I ever did. And I rode everywhere in London. I'd use it to get about, and I'd go for trips on it. And I met my great mate, Charlie Boorman, when we made a film together called Serpent's Kiss in Ireland. And we'd both had just had babies, and we were both into bikes. He'd grew up riding motorbikes. And so we just sort of, we did a lot of track days together, and we were involved in a race team, not riding, but we were sort of the glam squad for this little motorcycle racing team.
Like road bikes?
Road bikes, yeah. Like track racing. Yeah.
Wow.
And then I read this book written by Ted Simon, who wrote a beautiful book called Jupiter's Travels in the 70s. And he was a journalist, I think, for the Sunday Times. And he decided he wanted to travel the world. And he wasn't a biker, but he just thought that's the best way to see the world. And he's right. It really is the best way. There's something about it. So he wrote this, he got a Triumph, and he rode around the world. And it took him 4.5 years. And his book started, he starts like a 3.5 years in, and he's run out of petrol, and he's sitting underneath a tree in India somewhere. And his bike's propped up there because he's got no gas. And he just said, I'm sitting here safe in the knowledge that someone will come and help. And that's sort of how the book starts. And it had taken him 3 years to realize that that was a truth, you know. And there's something beautiful about his writing and the book. And it just sort of boiled away in the back of my brain.
Yeah.
Until one day I was thinking of... Charlie and I were always talking about looking for somewhere to ride. And we thought we'd go to Spain from London on some sports tours, and we'd take our wives on the back, and then maybe they could fly home and we'll race back. And I just started thinking, well, I don't know. And then I would start looking further afield, and I got a world map, and I thought we could go to China and back. That would be cool. And then I thought, well, what would just come back along the same route? And so I kept looking right on the map, and it was sort of a direct line round to America and, you know, Canada and, I just thought, well, we could do that. So that was our first trip in 2004.
Wait, you went all the way around the world?
We went from, well, it's officially not a round the world trip because it's only the Northern Hemisphere, but we rode from London round to New York. So we rode from London.
Oh, my God.
And we went in the Channel Tunnel to France, and then we rode to Far Eastern Russia and Siberia. And then we got a plane with the bikes to Anchorage, and then we rode from Anchorage to New York. And that was the, 4.5 months... And we shot it as a documentary with this amazing journalistic cameraman, Claudio von Planter, who's our guy, and he just rode with us. And
fake name. Fake.
So a third bike. That was a so it's
three
just a,
bikes, and then we had a couple of pickup trucks that we saw once in a while, and we'd you know, and then we did Africa. We did the whole African continent in 2007, and we did from Tierra del Fuego, which is the tip of South America, to Los Angeles, and just before the pandemic in 2019, on electric bikes, on the electric Harley.
All of these are filmed.
Oh yeah, I saw footage of that where you guys were in Chile, I think, going across the flat, in those electric
Patagonia.
Bikes.
That's pretty cool. They're all on Apple. There are three documentaries: Long Way Round, Long Way Down, and Long Way Up.
Okay, excellent.
That's the order to watch them.
Oh
my
God!
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's great.
I have a question. Do you...
Okay, go ahead, sir, and state your name first.
Where are you calling from?
Ewan, do you... But do you and Jason, do you guys ever get mistaken for each other? Because I always thought you guys kind of look similarly.
I've always thought
my
that.
Wife wants us to play brothers forever.
Me too. I've always said that. I've always said that.
Because you're beautiful, Ewan. You're really, really
what
handsome.
What a compliment to Jason that is. That's an incredible compliment
no,
to
I
Jason.
No, I see it. I definitely am. No.
Ewan, well, Ewan, do you feel like playing his much younger brother? You could.
Let's do it. No. I would definitely play his kid brother.
Twins.
You know, just sort of like, hey.
Jay, you could be his dad almost. I swear to God, let me look.
Will, can I talk to you for a second?
Move your camera a little bit.
I think we should put it out there, Jason. It should happen, don't you think?
Yes, please.
We should do some.
I'm ready.
Indie brothers thing.
Ewan, how's your American accent? Is it quite good?
I think it's okay.
Of course, it's good.
Yeah, I think it's all right.
He's been working his whole life.
I worked with Liz Hemmelstein. Did anyone work with Liz Hemmelstein?
No.
Well, you probably don't have to work with someone with your American accents, but I do.
Well, I'm Canadian. I had to work.
Will, wait. Did you really work on getting rid of your outs and abouts?
No, I didn't.
Out and about. God.
Out and about.
Did you?
No, I did. But there were certain things, you know, like just tried to get rid of.
Oh, sure.
You know, so then I didn't go up at the end of every sentence.
You just have
sentence.
To take the question mark off every sentence.
Yeah. And I didn't say house. But I used to do, it's an absolutely brutal day for motor car racing.
That's good.
I used to do that.
Is that Jackie Stewart?
That's do you do Jackie Stewart?
Yeah, it's Jackie Stewart. It's Jackie Stewart. Yeah.
Jackie Stewart.
Oh. Yeah.
Still not. He's still knocking about. He's still at all the races, Jackie.
Is he? Is he still around?
Yeah, it seems to be very present.
Now, are you a golf fan?
No, I just was interested in your outfit, your golfing outfit that you were discussing at the beginning with the funny trouser thing at the front.
It wasn't bad.
How do you all play golf?
Sean does not. Will and I do.
Jason,
you
do?
Yeah.
Do you play any at all?
I grew up playing because in Scotland everybody plays. And then I've done it from time to time, and I can never get over the fact that I'm not as good as I think I am. So
that's
I always end up in horrible mood. Is that just the way it is?
That's all of us. But then, you know, Rory McIlroy, he says, don't let golf affect your attitude. Let your attitude affect your golf.
Oh.
You know?
Okay, so, that's good.
Yeah.
I think I'm good at golf. If I could just get out of my way, I think I've.
No,
probably
you stick to motorcycles and rock and roll. You're a stud. You're a man's man. Will and I, you know, we're just golfers. You know.
Yeah, we're delicate golfers.
But here it's different. I feel like it's different. There's a sort of. I don't know if it's different. It's always struck me as being different here. In Britain, it seems to be feels a bit more elitist. And
here it's elitist.
Here, I feel like everybody plays golf, and you know, golf clubs are. I don't know, because the big golf clubs here in LA are so expensive, aren't they? Like you have to be.
Yeah, it's a real status thing. It's I'm not proud of it. I just love the game.
Yeah.
I will say this. I think the thing that I struggle with the most with golf are a lot of the people who do play golf, and I'm sure we're going to get a lot of pushback from people online.
From the golfing community.
And now we've enraged the heroin addicts and now the golfing community. And if they ever got together,
there should be a golf championship for heroin addicts. And that would be.
They just fall asleep as they're putting.
It would be amazing. Yeah. But you do have, it does, there is that sort of part of golf that does have this very sort of elitist and kind of exclusionary feel vibe to it, of people who are completely out of touch. And so you never want to become that. That's the part that I don't like.
Yeah,
as
but
well,
I mean, it's like if you like doing it, like who don't, right?
No,
who
I cares? Know, of course. But you just hope that you don't become that, you know?
I think you're right. I think that seems to be like the golf club side of things. And then because of the idea of being part of a club, it lends itself to that anyway, doesn't it? Something you have to pay into to be feel special at your club. But the actual game of golf when you're on the beautiful fairway is
really
an amazing
challenging
game. Yeah,
and
no question.
Yeah. I mean, Will, what do I grind or what? I mean, I'm out there just trying to really shoot a low number.
He's not even really fun to play with anymore.
No, not at all.
You too serious about it?
Yeah, way
well,
too serious.
Well, yeah, but I'm only out there for the challenge.
And the slowest golfer in California.
I'm speeding up. I'm trying to get faster.
You are speeding up. You are getting
faster. I find that difficult if there's someone behind me on the tee waiting, I get so stressed.
Yeah, his fist on his hip.
Oh, don't worry. He doesn't get stressed.
I tried golfing in Ireland once with my brother.
Did you?
Yeah, one of my friends, my brother Kevin, I played golf with him in Ireland, and they didn't have carts, so he'd carry our bags everywhere, and I said, I'm out. And then I golfed.
Wait, that's when you came out? oh, you're out of, sorry.
Golf club in Ireland? Wow.
Okay. I'm out.
This seems like a good spot.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
And I screamed it.
How come we haven't heard of Kevin before? How many siblings do you have, Sean?
We have heard
of Dennis, Kevin, Mike, who passed away sadly, my sister Tracy, and me.
Yeah. Kevin, you, Tracy.
And Dennis.
And Dennis.
Dennis, who's no longer with us.
No, Mike passed away.
Michael.
You've been friends with Sean for a long time, by the way. This is embarrassing for you.
Will, why don't you tell me the name of your brother real quick?
Chuck.
That was pretty fast. That's yeah, good. Yeah. You're getting faster. That's
My
good.
Other sister is here. Yeah. She has a Scottish name. Her name is Shanley. And
yeah, and the other
upstairs.
One is Tennis. Yeah. Tennis.
Tannis.
That's my joke.
But Shanley is here.
And then I played golf with Jimmy Burrows, who was on our podcast. And,
great golfer.
And Alan Thicke, who sadly passed away as well. But that was really fun. That was in Cabo San Lucas. That was, and I did really well.
Okay. Ewan McGregor's with us.
Yeah.
And he's joining us from a very handsome kitchen. Where is your house there, Ewan?
I'm down in my little, I'm in my tiny house. I've got a little tiny house in my garden. And
looks handsome.
I do, it's just like quiet in here because there's no one in here. So,
are you in California?
I'm in California, yeah.
We'll be right back. Hey, Smartless listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing. So maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartless. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
All right, back to the show.
So you've lived in America for a long time? You're like 5 years, six years? Something?
I moved here in 2008.
Okay.
And I became an American 2 years ago.
Welcome. And,
welcome.
I love it here. Thank you. I just love it. I love living here, and I have no intention to not live here. I just love it.
What was that process like? What did you have to know? You have to know like the Star Spangled Banner or basic American history, or how does that go?
It's a bit. Well, it's probably a bit like a driving test. You know, when you learn all this stuff, and then as soon as they say you can drive a car, you forget all of it. So it's a lot of American history. How the political system works here, which is difficult for a Brit because it's quite complicated, it seems. Yeah. And then you got to know names of like your local...
Oh, senators and then congressmen, yeah.
Congress people, senators and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then history and dates and stuff. They ask you dates of like when things were written and what have you.
Oh, wow.
I did it in 2007. I became I did the same thing. And I remember they did the thing you had to remember which were the original 13 states, et cetera, and all those sort of things. So I studied. I wanted to get 100%. And the guy, it's really up to the discretion of the person who's giving you that final interview, right? It was anyway back then. And the guy goes, he starts asking me a couple questions. And then he could see that I knew what I knew what the answers were. He's like, okay, well, you got this. And he moved on. I was like, no. You're not moving on. I studied this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I had the same thing. Because you have to get 10 questions. No, you have to get 6 questions right out of 10.
Yeah.
And that's it?
I got 6 right. Yeah. It's like 100. I think there's 100 potential questions. And they ask you 10. And you have to get at least 6 of them right. And so once you get 6 of them right, they go, okay, that's it. You're in. And I was like you. I was like, no, what are the other 4? I spent a lot of time learning this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Now, Ewan McGregor, talk to me about your domestic situation there. You got 1 kid, 2 kids, 1 wife, boyfriend. Yeah. It doesn't matter. This is a real liberal show.
I'm recently married. I married this year to my love, Mary, Elizabeth Winstead.
Oh, congratulations.
You got married this year?
I got married this year.
Nice.
I have 4 daughters with my ex-wife, Ev.
Yeah.
And Mary and I have a 1-year-old son. So I have 5 children.
Oh, amazing.
That's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's I'm awesome. Really lucky and very much in love and I'm very, very happy. And
how old's your son?
Yeah, I'm blessed with all my kids. He's just turned 1.
Wow.
Okay. I have a 2-year-old. I have 2 older boys from my first, and I have a 2-year-old as well.
Yeah. How old are your girls?
My eldest girl, Clara's 26.
Yeah.
And then I have 2 20-year-olds, Esther and Jamian, and my youngest daughter, Anouk, is 11. So I've got all ages. Yeah. I love it so much. I love it so much being a dad. I really do.
Think you were going to love it as much as you did? Or, I mean, I thought, this is going to be cool. And then I'm just like just a baby. I mean, I cry watching commercials if there's a little kid in it. I just love it.
I think I was totally always. Yeah, I was. I had Clara when I was 24 years old, and I was just always. I always knew that I wanted children, and I really love it. I really do. It really makes me incredibly
now,
happy.
Now, quick math there. That puts you at 50?
51.
51.
When's your birthday? What sign are you? Sorry, I'm asking for a friend.
And then I want to know what your rising is.
What are you?
I'm born on the end of, I was the last day of March, 31st of March, 1971. March. So I'm an Aries.
Aries.
Where are you guys at? What ages are we here in the...
Oh, I'm just 35, but I think that we should probably
move on.
No, Will doesn't. Will can't play older than 40.
I skew late 30s, but I I'm 50. I'm 52. Sean and I are both 52. We're only a couple weeks apart.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm 53. I'm the adult here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Growing up. That's why you're so good at golf, because you're just that bit older than us.
Yeah, but I just don't hit it as far anymore.
Hey, tell me about, because I've seen, I think, everything you've ever done. By the way, I also auditioned for Down With Love. Still, I didn't get that.
Oh,
And boy, this Make-A-Wish is going great with you.
Great average.
but tell me what it's like, because are you in Pinocchio coming out? Are you in it? Or is it like you voice it or you're in it?
I voice it. It's totally stop frame animation.
Wow. And that's Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, Yeah.
It's wild.
It's embarrassing. It was. I had an experience. I don't know if you've ever done this. It's a sort of an actor's nightmare of being in a situation where you're absolutely unprepared. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with this. I went to meet Guillermo and just, I thought, to discuss the role and to discuss what we were going to do with it. And I arrived and I was in a sound studio with in front of a mic with a lectern with the script on there, and he's behind the glass and he's going, okay, let's start off with Q1.
What?
And I hadn't read the script because I just thought we were having a chat. So I was busy and I hadn't read it, and I started trying to do it. I just didn't tell him. And I thought, I just have to go. So I started, uh-oh. And of course I had an idea of who Jiminy Cricket was, but it didn't seem to be anything like what I was reading on the page, and I didn't know what accent to use or what
the sweating.
I almost got to the point where I wanted to cry, you know, I was so embarrassed. And I just asked him to come in the room after about 20, I did about 25 minutes of this nightmare. So he comes round into the room and I went, look, really tearing up. And I went, I have to tell, I haven't read the script. I wasn't sent it. I thought we were having a discussion about, and it turned out, thank God, I hadn't been sent it, although I didn't know that for absolute sure. But anyway, then he was just great because he just went, no, what you're doing is good. And he talked to me for about half an hour, and then we just went and we recorded the whole thing.
No way.
And then I read it and we went back in. So it's been one of those things, you've probably all done them, where you go back several times, you go in and out. And but I think it's going to be really, I love him and I love his take on things. And so to be involved in this is really cool.
Yeah. Will wants to do some voiceover work. Talk him through the process of it.
The crazy story. I told you guys the story about when I did Ratatouille, right? Did I tell you guys this?
I didn't know you were in that.
I was in that, and Brad Bird directed. So similar thing. So I get a call. This is crazy that you just told this story. When was that? That was like at least 15 years ago, maybe more. We were still doing original Arrested Development at the time. Anyway, he goes, they send me the thing and they go, you're going to go up to Disney to record this stuff. And I'm like, great. Yeah, no problem. Like, I get up there. I guess it sent me materials, but I'm not sure. Either I didn't see it or ignored it or whatever. And I was not prepared for what I was walking into. Same thing. Walk into a soundstage, into a recording studio at Disney. Brad's there, and he's like, and he's in the booth with me, and they bring out all their, he's like, you've seen all the art for your character, Horace, the sous chef. And I go, yeah, of course I've seen the art.
And this one's my favorite. Look at that.
And I'm looking at it going, absorb everything, you know, just, and I'm looking at, and then he goes, so obviously, and as you know, because Horst is German, and I'm like, yeah, right, because he's German.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, like, what the fuck? And I'm thinking, I don't think I do a German, apart from like what you do in a bar to a friend. I don't know. And he goes, and then he's like, okay, let's go. And I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do? Same thing. The panic, the sweat, the fucking, and he's right there. And Brad Bird, I revere the guy who made The Incredibles. He's a great director. And he's gone on, it was super sweet guy. And I just did it. I just bullshitted my way through. I did this fucking, the movie exists to this day.
Oh my God.
Do it, 3, 2, 1, German accent, 3, 2, 1.
With this thumb, I killed 3 men.
That's pretty good. Now, Jiminy Cricket, is he Scottish?
Yeah, sort of very like my voice, because I didn't really know what else to do. So he's very close to me.
Did you go higher? Did you go higher at all? He's just small.
He's tiny, so I like.
He's wee.
I'm always shouting everything because everyone's so far away, you know. So it's a very shouty.
Really funny.
It's a very shouty performance. Pinocchio!
This summer, in his shoutiest performance to date, Ewan McGregor is.
Ewan, I want to hear a little bit of an American accent. Just for a second, just a little bit.
I am Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Jason Bateman.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Right.
There's so many American accents, aren't there?
Too manly. Unbelievable, too manly.
Yeah, that was too.
Yeah. Are you excited about something next? Because you always just pick the coolest stuff. Yeah. You always work the greatest
people. And you
people.
Like working that much?
I tell you what, I've really learned that I like not working too. Mm. Now that we had the experience of being off for that year, you know, with lockdown. And I I've never really been that great at not working. I like working and I enjoy it so much, what we do. And but I realized that I was actually much better at not working than I thought I was. So now I've got this little boy and I'm with Mary, and I feel like I just want to, I do want to spend less time away and more time at home. And so this year I've done very little. I've done a lot of promotion for the Star Wars show this year. And I don't know exactly what I was supposed to be making. I had an experience that hasn't happened to me a lot, where I was going to be making a movie in Scotland. And so I sort of planned my year about making this movie in Scotland for the whole of the autumn. And it totally just disappeared. Mm. I was just texting the director one day about a question about something else, and he went, "Oh no, we're not doing it." Thanks for letting me know.
Wait, so, what about Moulin Rouge? Because you were so great in that. Would you ever do another musical?
Yes, totally. I loved it. And I did a musical on stage after that. I did Guys and Dolls in London for six months. Wow.
That's right.
Really liked it. What an amazing thing to do. It's quite something to get on stage and do something like that every night.
Abe Burrows, right? Yeah. Abe Burrows? Did Abe Burrows write that?
Yeah, Abe Burrows wrote that.
The guy Jimmy Burrows we were just talking about, who's on the show. He's our friend. He's a great television director, one of the greatest. And his dad, Abe Burrows, wrote it.
Oh, wow.
So when you're not being a great dad and a great husband, to fill your days, what would you do? Aside from being a dad and a husband, do you have any dumbass hobby like me and Will playing golf?
I do. I have always loved motorbikes and old car and VWs, like old Beetles and buses and stuff. So I'm a bit of a...
You're out there fixing them up and stuff?
Yeah, I like to potter. I'm not great. I'm not like a mechanic or anything, but I do... faff around. I like faffing around in there, and I spend hours like in my shed.
Now, what is the goal when you I see people working on engines and stuff? It's not just about the difference between making them run and not run. Isn't there like fine tune? Like you can make it run a little bit quieter, or make it run a little faster. Like what are you out there? What do you do when you're faffering?
It's generally just trying to make them move.
So it is about on or off
with the kind of stuff that I like. Yeah. It's not that fine tuning, really. The VWs are pretty simple, and I just love them. I love them so much. And
how many you got?
I have three Beetles, and I've got two buses. Wow. I have an old 1960 Rolls Royce that I love.
Did you see the new VW electric car?
Yeah,
it's pretty cool, huh?
I'm working with VW. No helping way. Them promote the new electric bus, yeah.
Wow.
Because I did that big trip on an electric motorbike, and I've been an enthusiast of VWs for years. And so we got in touch, and we've made a couple of commercials like with my old stuff and, moving into this new electric bus.
Don't they own Porsche now?
They always have.
Yeah, so many. Porsche and Lamborghini and Ducati.
VW owns Audi, and Porsche.
I drive the new Audi. Wow.
Who's got a new Audi?
Yeah, I drive the new Audi all-electric vehicle. It is my favorite car of all time.
It's less written, Sean. Still rolling, Sean. Less written, and action.
No, it really is my favorite car of all time.
Ewan, what's the ad that you do for the travel company? I just have to say this.
Expedia.
Yeah. As a voiceover guy, I love your intonation on, it's not about the things we have, it's about the, what is it? What's the final line? It's the places we go.
Well, are we going to live our lives and regret the things that we didn't buy or the places we didn't go?
Or the places we didn't go. And the way you say it, fucking love it, man. It's so good, right? They play it on sports all the time. It's so good.
I like that.
What? None of my Hyundai reads.
No, Jason, on Hyundai, I don't know.
On Hyundai, it's your journey. You don't like the way I say it's your journey. You know, the way it really hit your, no?
Ewan, when you're on the Expedia, so good.
Have you heard my lemons?
Yes, lemons.
I like the lemons one.
Lemons.
Yes, you come in on that lemons, right?
I haven't heard
lemons. It's very difficult.
Is it wrong that I really, like, I think there was a time back in the train spotting days where I would have been like, fuck that, I'm not doing a fucking advert. And now I'm like, can we get in touch with Expedia?
Gnashing his teeth about doing Star Wars. And now it's just like, we're going through all the, Well,
it's the best, right?
Bring it on. I'm like,
perfect. Yeah.
It's the absolute best. I love doing it too. It's so good. And we're available.
We're available for limes.
Ewan, God, we could talk to you forever. It's so great having you here on the show.
Very fast hour.
Very fast. God, you're a delight.
I needn't have been so nervous. I was very nervous before. I don't know why. I guess because I haven't met you all, and I was impressed to be on your show, and but I've had a great time.
I'd love to meet you in person one day. That would be great, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for something where we got a brother thing going.
I think we should definitely do that. I'd love that.
We're going to find something.
I'd watch the hell out of that, right, Joe?
I would watch it, yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we'd watch the hell out of it.
All right, guys.
You, and such a pleasure. I love you. I'm such a huge fan. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Well, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for doing our show, buddy.
Thanks for doing it. Great to meet you.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Ewan. See ya.
Bye.
Wow.
We have had nice people on this show.
Yeah.
But like really nice people. I feel like that might be the gold right there. Yeah, as far as just nice, sort of like
real
infectious, positive energy.
I was nervous.
I knew Sean. I've been sitting on this one for a while, and I knew I was like, oh, Sean is gonna flip.
Because he played Obi-Wan Kenobi?
No, but then in those movies, but then he just came out with the series Obi-Wan Kenobi. And also like I've seen Trainspotting's one of my all time favorite movies. Right. Like, that's one of the movies that made me want to be an actor.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I just always assumed that that's a really good dude.
Yeah.
And there it is, sure enough.
There you go, yeah.
I had heard a couple of people just sort of anecdotally say that he's just the coolest, nicest, realest person. And
I love him.
He's great. I know. It's so great. I love his accent is so great. And he's Scottish, and we were talking about the Open, which mm-hmm. was played in up in St. Andrews in Scotland, not to be confused with the Canadian. There is another St. Andrews, but that's called St. Andrews by the sea.
Really well worked in there, Will. That was good. You've been sitting on that since we talked about?
No, it just occurred to me, and I was like, wow, how am I going to get there. Anyway, bye.
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 Smart. Less. Smart. Less.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarv, and Bennett Barbico.
Smart. Less.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app
or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.